Georgia in the midst of a Southeast tour. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, Better Late Than Never, it's Bathrobs Pierre's Broadside. Stay tuned. Welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. It's August 2nd, 2007. I'm Robert Norse, and I'm a bit late starting because my car overheated. Hey, always remember to put your radiator cap on after you've checked your water. A useful tip to know. And I had to get a ride from a friendly motorist who was really very friendly. Thank you, Warren. Appreciate the help and getting to the studio. Anyway, you're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is, again, Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse, and for 2 hours you get to chat with me, listen to me, or turn off the station and go to something better or worse, as the case may be. Subjects I'm going to be covering tonight include some of the usual street interviews we're building for a series of protests. Well, we'll be doing our fifth week in front of Ryan Coonerty's Bookshop Santa Cruz. He's the vice mayor of the town and chief supporter of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which criminalizes homeless sleep after 11 o'clock at night. And there's a protest coming up that is a bigger one, actually. After this will be there are six successive Sundays on the sidewalk in front of his Bookshop Santa Cruz, where he's a chief worker and where he can be presumably reached to discuss why it is he insists on believing that homeless people don't have the right to sleep legally, not everywhere and anywhere, but somewhere at night where there's space for 40 people tonight in the Emergency Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program and an actual 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there. So it's very disproportionate, as well as a federal court decision, the Jones decision from Los Angeles, which has made the largest city in the state force them to allow homeless people to sleep at night legally in the Skid Row area, which is, I got a 40-square-block area, something like that. We're actually going to have some folks coming up from Los Angeles on August 12th at City Hall at the Sunday Night Sleepout to talk about that, and I'll be talking more about that tonight. Also, on the show tonight, we have hopefully a call from Berkeley and an update on the special Berkeley City Council meeting and press conference to restore Measure R in the wake of numerous federal attacks on medical marijuana throughout the state. Measure R was a measure that very, very narrowly appeared to have lost in the 2004 Berkeley election, which would have removed the restriction that conservative zoning commission and other city bureaucrats put on medical marijuana clubs, and actually forced one club to stop. It took them 4 years to try to move across the street from where they were, and finally the landlord said he couldn't wait any longer with a lease offer. Anyway, Measure R would have changed that, and it was defeated by less than a percentage point, I believe, and they found that there was potential voter fraud. The Diebold voting machines suddenly had lost all the results. They were what was used in the election in Berkeley. And the judge has tentatively ordered another election. And there was a press conference, a protest, and pressure on the Berkeley City Council to take action on that issue. And hopefully we'll get a call from Becky of Berkeley. It's not our local Becky Johnson, who's a good writer on homeless issues and such, but the Berkeley Becky. So we'll see if she gets back in touch. And if not, I'll just read to you what I can glean off the Internet. And while we're waiting for all that to happen, while I'm kind of picking up on what's going down here, I'm going to play a little bit from past protests at the bookshop Santa Cruz, the sidewalk in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, where we set up a table every Sunday at 2 o'clock in the so-called free speech zone, play a little music, sing some songs, and sign up people who are interested in the sleeping band lawsuit, our lawsuit against the city of Santa Cruz. Well, we have a caller, as you can hear. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, this is Becky from the Berkeley Patients Group. How are you?
Hey, Becky, I was just mentioning you on the air.
Goodness. what timing we have.
Isn't that exciting? I mean,
it is.
Yeah, the timing is great. what's your last name, Becky?
It's DeCoyster.
Boy, that's right. You told me about that. It's capital D, capital K, something like that?
Yeah, capital D, capital K, E-U-S-T-E-R.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to remember that one and write it down for my later program notes.
Sounds good.
And I mentioned that you and others had gone to the Berkeley City Council on Tuesday at one of their special meetings, which probably didn't even let you in. But
well, you know, surprisingly, they did. I don't know how much of the backstory does your audience have familiarity with.
We actually don't know the backstory. In fact, I'd be grateful if you give us the lowdown and the kind of the broader picture on, first of all, raids around the state as well as Berkeley's intransigence and the defeat of Measure R,
mm-hmm.
or apparently the apparent
so
defeat.
Much. There's actually the silver lining in all of this is that there's actually a lot of good news happening. And when that starts happening for the medical cannabis movement, it makes the DEA quite nervous, and they, you know, press down a little bit harder. So I think that's part of what's going on here. Gosh, where to start?
Before we begin, where exactly? Let me tell them your credentials. Who are you, and why should we listen to anything you say anyway?
I understand. My name is Becky DeCoyster, and I am the community liaison for the Berkeley Patients Group. So I'm a spokesperson who deals with, you know, our city council. We're members of Chamber of Commerce. You know, I'm a spokesperson for the movement, basically, and especially for the patients at BPG.
Go ahead. Sounds good.
Okay. And I've been doing this now for about 3 years, and before that, surprisingly enough, I taught Catholic high school for 12 years. So it was an interesting career jump, and certainly took me right into the activist mode.
And are you a medical marijuana user yourself?
I have been in the past, but currently, no, I am not. It's a movement that I believe strongly in. My father died of lung cancer in Missouri in 2002. And, of course, Missouri's laws are quite draconian about cannabis of any sort. And he was unable, I was unable to get him any relief in the form of any medical cannabis. And I know that it would have helped him, especially at the end of his illness, you know, when he lost his appetite. You know, I've seen the wonders that edible preparations can do for that sort of thing. And it really got me interested in this movement, and I was lucky enough to join up with the Berkeley Patients Group, which has been open for about 8 years now. They're definitely a best practices operator. They are, you know, they're a social service agency as well. We're not just a dispensary where you come and go. We offer our patients free services, ranging from massage to acupuncture to personal counseling. And all of those services are free as part of, you know, becoming a member of the Berkeley Patients Group. So we're much more than just a dispensary. So.
How about kicking down $150 for getting a card or a doctor's recommendation, which is one of the main stumbling blocks for poor people in Santa Cruz?
Absolutely. We have an extensive program. I'm not sure of the exact number, but I know it's upwards of 100 patients that we provide with free medicine every week. I know there are a lot more needy folks out there, and we wish that we could, you know, we expand that program absolutely as much as we can whenever we can. We also have a hospice program for terminally ill patients where we will actually visit in the home and provide, you know, a little bit of companionship and you know, check in on doctor visits and help sort pills and things like that. So,
do you actually provide opportunities for patients to get cards? I mean, that's one of the problems, is not that people can't afford the medicine, but they can't afford the cards.
Absolutely, and we've had two significant losses in the past year. Dr. Todd McCaria and Dr. Mike Alkaly both passed away, and both of them were known for subsidizing patients' cards and everything. So in their absence, we have begun to expand into that as a service that we offer. And again, we wish we could do so much more with all of our programs, but at this time, it's something that we're just beginning to make available.
In Santa Cruz, we have a district attorney, Bob Lee, who has adopted the interpretation of SB 420, the state law, which backs up Proposition 215,
right.
The state initiative that, you know, does the medical marijuana, makes it legal.
Exactly.
It claims that you have to be a care provider in the most intimate and direct sense to be a person who distributes marijuana legally, which in essence rules all the clubs in California out as illegal entities.
Right. I'm really glad you brought that up because that interpretation is vexing. And actually, Senator Carol Migdon is proposing a Senate bill number 529 that would clarify that and kind of settle that question once and for all. We're hoping that we can get that on the ballot or, you know, get a vote on that next year. We thought for a moment that it might happen this year, but then we wanted to make sure that it was, you know, that it was absolutely the exact bill that we want, that it, you know, left no question about the legality of what we do in providing care to patients.
Has the Alameda County DA been going after clubs in that county as criminal conspiracies because they aren't, you know, providing, you know, bed-to-bed care for, you know, patients that they're selling marijuana to? Are clubs being told that they can't sell marijuana because it's not legal to sell even to those with cards?
That's a good question. In Alameda County, the closures have, I can really only speak to BPG's experiences. I know there have been some closures. I know that Hayward just voted, I believe, maybe even this week, so much has been going on, but to close their last club. Their city council chose to do that. We're finding that it's city councils that are the make or break point in supporting medical cannabis. For example, Oakland has a very, you know, strict regulations, great policies, and Barb Kelly, who administers that program in Oakland, is, you know, she's wonderful, and they don't have problems, and it works. What we find is that when cities don't get in and regulate, it leaves the door open not only for folks who maybe aren't best practices operators or don't have a social service mindset, but also to, you know, the sheriff, to the police, to whoever wants to come in and start poking around. So,
what's the situation been in Berkeley, and how has that led to Measure R?
Oh, wow, Measure R, yes. In Berkeley, let's see, they regulated down to 3 dispensaries right about the time shortly after we had established ourselves. And the city council and the folks in, you know, city staff have been supportive, very supportive. 86% of Berkeley voters approved Prop 215, so there's a strong groundswell of support in this particular city. For the idea of, you know, patients having safe and affordable access to their medicine. And Berkeley has been very sensible in looking at it and saying, okay, well, we have 3, and that seems to serve the population, you know, quite nicely. And, you know, it has not, we've always enjoyed very positive relationships with the city. So.
However, Proposition Measure R was an attempt to, based upon the notion that clubs, these number of clubs were not adequate, that the restrictions were too severe, and it attempted to loosen those restrictions, right?
Yes, and that came out in 2004. The climate was slightly different in 2004. Oakland was just going through a purge. They had initially not regulated as closely as they might have, and so they had an expansion, you know, proliferation, if you will, of clubs. And so what we were finding was that as the Oakland clubs shut down, patients were not having a place to turn to. And so at that point, and also due to some problems with zoning in the city of Berkeley, which is restrictive in terms of dispensaries, there was talk that perhaps the best way to do it would be to put the zoning process in the hands of a special board that would, you know, analyze what the need was and whether there was a need for another license or not. It would also have changed some of the cultivation limits in the city. And it narrowly was defeated by 191 votes, and we asked for a recount. And so they, you know, the county went and they pushed a little button and they handed us a reprint of that vote. And we said, no, we would like a re-vote or a recount. We want to be able to compare actual votes with the data stored in the machines. We would like to see chains of custody, et cetera. And the county came back and said, well, we can't exactly, you know, provide. And, of course, months are going by. The upshot of it all was that the county sent back the machines. During this investigation, the county sent the Diebold machines back to Texas, to Diebold. And some of them went off to other parts of the country and got used in other elections, and some of them sat in Texas. So we sent a computer scientist and a legal counsel down to Texas to look at the machines that we could put our hands on. Of those machines, they could only get the data that they were looking for, the type of, you know, cross-checkable data, from 4% of these machines. And so the final ruling is not out yet, but Judge Winifred Smith, bless her heart, in her tentative ruling said, you know, this is either willful ignorance or gross ignorance, or, you know, how could this happen? And the only remedy would be to put Measure R back on the ballot. So it was a surprise to us, and it is interesting in terms of, you know, if it does go back on the ballot, it would change the zoning, particularly in Berkeley, at a time that might actually be very positive for the city.
So, you know, I've talked to other people from Berkeley who actually have been critical of the three clubs in Berkeley or groups that distribute marijuana, claiming that they become kind of haute cuisine, you know, upper bourgeoisie clubs that don't serve poor people primarily, and poor people don't really have access to them in any meaningful way. Mm-hmm. And the Measure R was to some extent an attempt to be a tonic for that. Is there some substance to these concerns?
Again, I can only speak for BPG, and I think that we do as good a job as we possibly can of offering service to patients who really are truly needy. There are, one aspect of this is that there are so many people who, you know, they don't have health insurance to begin with. Of course, there's no health insurance coverage for their medical marijuana, and they're in bad straits, and we definitely are aware of that as an issue in Berkeley. I think the zoning change would... I don't know that more clubs would be the answer. I think, you know, having us located maybe in more accessible areas to public transit might be, you know, one way to help serve that population, you know, a lot better. And also for the clubs to just continue to keep, you know, I as far as I know, at least two of the Berkeley clubs do have a program like I described to you. We call it the Helping Hands Program, where weekly we provide as much, you know, medicine as we can to patients who really can't afford it. So we, you know, we are doing everything we can. We're very sensitive to that situation. So, and another aspect of that is that all of the services that we do offer to patients are free. So, at the very least, you know, we can help with a modicum of medicine. We can offer massage. We can give counseling. You know, resume building courses, things like that. So.
How many patients would you say are not served by the clubs in Berkeley? What percentage of the people who need medical marijuana are actually getting it?
Gosh, Robert, I wouldn't even begin to know how to put a number on that, or where to draw that line. I'm sure that the number is substantial, and you know, because times are tough. Times are tough all over. So.
In Santa Cruz, we have increased crackdown of people using marijuana, actually for medication purposes, who are poor, kind of off to the side on their street people.
Right.
And they're getting these, you know, misdemeanor tickets, and I'm advising them to take them to a jury trial,
mm-hmm.
and advise the juries of their right to nullify.
Yes.
And to just go right ahead and also put the county through the realization that it's going to cost them $10,000 to do a jury trial if they want to back up these harassment citations by officers of a Santa Cruz mm-hmm. Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
So in Berkeley, you had a pioneer measure in 1979 making all marijuana enforcement supposedly the lowest priority.
Yes.
And that apparently went nowhere because by the 90s, Chris Worthington and other council members were proposing that there be some check on the massive number of felony busts going on against essentially kids on Telegraph Avenue to clear the streets of young people
mm-hmm.
whom they felt to be problem people. And we're talking not heroin, meth, cocaine, or rat poison. We're talking marijuana.
Exactly.
Not medical marijuana, which is your specialty, but marijuana used for whatever purposes and some of it mm-hmm. medically used.
Mm-hmm.
What's the situation? You've been around Berkeley for how long?
I've been around Berkeley for, 5 years in the Bay Area for 12 now,
so. Right, so you weren't around in the 70s or 80s, but you probably have heard some of the history.
Oh, yes, I definitely know my history.
And you're probably aware of how people are treated on Telegraph Avenue by the police.
Absolutely.
And, of course, the entire division of the attack on the drug war between, the good medical marijuana users and the questionable recreational marijuana users.
Oh, yes.
Is a way of splitting people up, and I think focusing people's attentions on areas instead of the broader, more meaningful picture, the 750,000 people are arrested every year, according
mm-hmm.
to normal, for
mm-hmm.
use of marijuana one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And in most states, there is no medical marijuana dispensation, as you know.
Absolutely.
So I'm kind of throwing a lot at you, but I guess, and I'm going to go back to some other things, but
sure.
Here in Santa Cruz, with Measure K, which makes marijuana use admittedly in private between adults supposedly the lowest priority, in which the city has sued to stop this oversight commission from checking out that the police are actually doing that,
mm-hmm.
what kind of checks do you have on the police department to stop them from violating Berkeley's supposed 79 ordinance? What isn't supposed? Right. It's a real ordinance.
Yes, yes.
That's supposed to prevent them from doing this.
12.26, absolutely.
Yeah.
12.26 does state that, the city of Berkeley shall make enforcement of, action against marijuana use in any form its lowest priority, as you stated. In 2002, the city council also voted unanimously to pass a resolution preventing the Berkeley Police Department from working with the federal government on any marijuana-related investigations, medical marijuana-related investigations. So there are two types of safeguards there. In terms of Berkeley's enforcement of, call it recreational use or use in public of marijuana, it's interesting. You can go on the City of Berkeley's website and they have a map where you can look up, crime for the past 180 days, and they'll show what type of crime it was. Was it drug use? Was it, a burglary, et cetera? We're working really hard to get even more data on that from the police department. In terms of, what is the overall picture? Because they play those cards pretty close to their chest. And so you can get a sense of what's happening, and you certainly know that the merchant associations are pushing for, tighter restrictions on loitering and all of the various, ways they have to battle that. But in terms of getting a really full big picture of what's happening in Berkeley, it's very difficult. We're working really hard with the police department to get that, and it's not something, I don't think it's a high priority for them to get us that sort of information. I think you would find probably less concentration of crime around dispensaries, certainly, and you would probably find more on those commercial corridors, partly because there are more tenants there who are calling the police, who are not realizing the bigger picture and sort of taking part in this war on the poor and on people who can't afford to be anywhere else. But I guess my shortest answer for that is it's very difficult to get that big picture in Berkeley, even though we do have these, these laws on the books.
We're talking with Becky of Berkeley. Becky, hang on. We may have a caller calling in. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I can, and you haven't been listening to the show, right? You're calling in from the street?
I'm calling from the street.
Okay, Becky, can you hang? Don't go away on us.
I won't go away.
Okay, this is Mike, right?
Mike Lassell.
Hey, Mike, I know you came to the last Human Rights Organization meeting. You've been beaten up by police, and you had a report this afternoon that you were again attacked by police officers, not physically, but you were threatened for essentially trying to sit down on the sidewalk near the boardwalk with and talk to a friend. Is that accurate?
It's accurate. It's, yes, absolutely accurate. I'm sitting in front of the same building right now. I'm in front of the Beach Market right now, where I just stopped by to say hello to a friend of mine named Leroy, and the cops told me if I didn't leave the sidewalk that they were wired for sound and they would fuck me up.
Those were their words. Wired for sound and fuck you up.
Yes, fuck me up.
And the name of the
badge
officer?
Number 137.
His name?
Hernandez.
Hernandez, Officer Hernandez. Officer Hernandez wants to call in and give his side of the story. I'd be very interested in hearing that. Mike, have you been, you know, you sleep outside, right?
Yes, sir.
Have you been hassled for sleeping outside in the last couple weeks?
Yes, I have.
What happened?
The last ticket I got was July 3rd.
Okay, I think you're actually going to be part of our lawsuit against the city that will try to end the city's sleeping ban at night.
Yes. I'm on your team.
On the line with us, by the way, you can say hello to her, Mike, is Becky of Berkeley, who's fighting for the rights of medical marijuana patients up there.
Hi there, Mike. How are you?
Hello.
I'm sorry about your experience today. That sounds awful.
I'm a little bit shook up. I mean,
I just stopped
by to say hello to a friend of mine, and the cops told me they were wired for sound, and they're going to fuck me up if I don't get off the street to Santa Cruz.
And you actually, did you suggest to them that perhaps, any more of the conversation for us, did you suggest something to the police officer, what he should do, or?
I just told the officer, I said, excuse me, sir, I said, I just stopped, I'm walking down the sidewalk, and I just stopped to say hello to Leroy. And he told me, get the fuck off the fucking sidewalk, away from the boardwalk.
Now, did he mean don't sit on the sidewalk, or you can't stand on the sidewalk?
He told me don't exist.
Really? Because
wow.
Now, what did Leroy do when he heard this? Did he stay seated?
Leroy was a little bit intimidated, and he walked away.
And what
but
about?
I requested the officer's badge number and his name, and he told me, "Fuck you." And I said, I looked at his shirt, and it said 137.
And
the other officer standing next to him was telling me he's going to fuck me up. He said, I'm wired for sound. I'll fuck you up.
Now, did anyone threaten to give you a ticket?
I asked him. I requested him to give me a ticket. I said, would you like to give me a ticket, officer? Please do so. He said, no, I will fuck you up.
And were you seated when he approached you?
Actually, I think I was kneeling down next to... maybe I was sitting on my backpack. I'm not certain.
I think kneeling is legal. Sitting within 14 feet of a building in Santa Cruz is illegal, a law which I guess some merchants are trying to expand to Berkeley, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm,
Becky.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mike...
I was at least 40 feet from the entrance of the Beach Market where I'm sitting right now presently.
Well, I'm glad you're maintaining your right to be there. I'm glad that you haven't been further assaulted by the police, and I'm sorry that we don't have anything else to do other than simply, you know, this is being both broadcast live on the net, and it's also being archived at huffsantacruz.org in case you ever want to, you know, get back to it, Mike, or if anybody else who's listening does. Also, there's a meeting of the Human Rights Organization on Saturday, as you know, at 2 o'clock at the Firefly Cafe at 131 Front Street, and I invite people to come there and talk to you there about this further.
Right. I'll be there.
All right. Anything else you want to report?
I'm just totally dismayed that the way the boardwalk, I believe that the Santa Cruz Beach boardwalk is the heart of the assault against the homeless people because the cops that are assaulting all of us are telling us to disappear because the tourists don't want to see us or the cops think they don't see us. Actually, the tourists actually like most of the homeless people.
Yeah, that's always been my feeling, that it's more a fear that some merchants have and that police officers and some city planners have, that they kind of can outthink everybody else and present this kind of Carmel-like Disneyland appearance, which isn't really particularly attractive.
I don't understand this mentality. I just don't understand this mentality.
Yeah.
My forefathers wrote the Constitution of the United States of America. I have blood, genetic blood ties with the men that wrote the Constitution of the United States of America.
Well, watch out. They were slaveholders. You know that, don't you? You know, I want to ask you, Mike, have you ever used medical marijuana or marijuana?
Oh, I use marijuana.
And do you have a card?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Actually, I don't know. I just have never applied for it.
What condition do you use it for?
Actually, marijuana, I use it because I have insomnia.
And it helps you sleep?
Yes.
Well, actually, yep. Insomnia is a helpful condition in Santa Cruz because it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night if you're homeless. You know that.
Well, that's why they want to beat me up.
Well, it's something we're going to be doing something about. You come to the Human Rights Organization on Saturday at 2, and also come to the protest at the Bookshop Santa Cruz the next day, where Vice Mayor Coonerty, you know, has his lair, and then we're going to be, you know, we will be trying to get people together to resist this kind of, you know, mass criminalization of the homeless enforced by arbitrary and sounds like rather brutal and abusive behavior by police officers.
This is kind of bullshit Hitler did, man. This is bullshit.
Yeah, well,
You know what? I have lived here for 18 years, man. 18 years. July 1989, I got here. And I have been here for 18 years. And most of the time, I had a place to live and a job. But because of rogue cops, this bullshit, I'm forced out on the streets. And I'm living out here with a backpack. And because I have a backpack, they think they can beat me up. That's bullshit. I have a constitutional right to protect my person and my property, even against rogue cops.
And I hope you can.
And if you look at the Constitution, if the rotten cop is going to fucking harm me and beat me up, I have a constitutional right to take a stand to protect my person.
I agree. But I think what you need to do is take that stand with a bunch of other people and find other people who feel similarly and have been similarly treated. And I hope you can bring them to the meetings and hope we can go further with that.
I'm getting sick and tired of getting crippled up by fucking cops that are beating on me because I have a backpack on my back, and they're the ones that caused it.
I hear you. Anything else?
That's it.
Well, that's enough. Wow. And please keep calling in and letting us know if anything else happens. And if people call in when the show is not on, and I'm only on twice a week, you can call the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, and we can take your story down. We can't do much else. Mike, I know you were asking earlier, how about a video camera? How about some people out here on the streets backing you up? And all I could say is,
No. If you guys would have had a video camera out here, you would have got a bunch of good stuff, man. These cops are mowing down the homeless down here so ruthlessly, so pathetically. It is so wrong. It is so wrong.
Well, if anybody has that kind of equipment and they want to come out and do some work with us, please give a call to 423-HUFF. And thanks, Mike, for calling in.
Mike, good luck to you. I'm really pleased to hear that your spirit is so high and you know, stay strong, man.
And one more thing I want to say.
Go ahead.
You bastard cops can whip on me, but you cannot whip me.
Hear, hear.
There you go.
Thanks,
thank
Mike.
You.
You're welcome.
Wow.
Yeah, well, Becky, that's what's going on here. And actually, that's various pretexts are used. A little more genteel cover sometimes down on Pacific Avenue.
It's gentrification. I mean, I think he hit on a very good point. I mean, Santa Cruz is not Carmel, and that's what makes Santa Cruz Santa Cruz. And, you know, I've spent many a fine hour in that city, and it is. It's even in the 5 years that I've been up in the North Bay, I've seen it change dramatically in that city, and it is. It's disturbing in the extreme.
I'm looking at the city attorney's analysis of the Patients' Access to Medical Cannabis Act of 2004, Measure R.
Mm-hmm.
The ordinance would eliminate existing limits on the amount of medical marijuana a qualified patient or primary caregiver can possess and cultivate. Currently, 2.5 pounds. And 1.5 pounds of grown up to 10 cannabis plants.
Mm-hmm.
It would retain but modify the current limit of 10 outdoor plants.
Right.
It would eliminate the existing limits of 12.5 pounds of dried cannabis and 50 cannabis, substituting what?
Substituting whatever is appropriate for that patient or caregiver at the time. I think the one thing that doesn't get mentioned is that cannabis is a beautiful herb, and it's something that you can cultivate yourself. I mean, you have an aloe plant on your kitchen windowsill. This is a medicine that you can grow yourself. Not everybody is able to do that. We have paraplegic patients. We have patients with, you know, personality disorders that don't allow them to have, you know, a regularly scheduled life. And there are also people who are able to devote the energy and resources into growing that very beautiful medicine. And so something like Measure R would allow for that sort of unequal distribution to be balanced out.
There's also a part of Measure R is to require the city to deputize individuals operating collectives or dispensaries. I think Oakland tried that and didn't save
Ed
Rosenthal.
Well, we saw what happened with Ed Rosenthal, sure.
But I mean,
having it on the books is not a bad thing. It's you know, it's a step in the right direction.
Then they will also establish a peer review committee composed to certify that any new cannabis collective or dispensary has a strategy to meet safety and operational compliance standards.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an attempt to do what you suggested, more closely monitor, or is it to replace repressive monitoring by existing agencies?
It is a combination of both. It is to, I would not say that our monitoring in Berkeley is terribly repressive, but in order to, the impetus for that part of the language there is to prevent bad operators from coming in, profiteering, things like that, people who don't have the patient's best interest in mind. I mean, what we're seeing down in L.A. right now is a city that had no regulations, and so, you know, there are very widely varying estimates of how many clubs are actually operating in L.A. right now, but there may be up to 400. That's, you know, that's the high number that we hear.
Is that a bad thing?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how that divides out among the total population, but what is not so good about it is that there are certain accepted ways to do this in a positive way, in a way that serves patients, that meets the standards of state law, and there are.
Let me interrupt you, Becky, and get
sure.
this call here.
Absolutely.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Becky and Robert.
Robert, this is a pot thing. It's Madison.
Go ahead, Madison.
I'm relaying a story that was written to me by a deaf friend last week, and he's very mild-mannered Santa Cruzan. Never have I seen him drunk or stoned or bothering anybody. And he was behind the pot club. I don't even know where it is, but he told me I was behind the pot club just sitting or riding my bike or something somewhere near there, and the cops pull over, pull him aside, rest him up, and blah, 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 and they said, well, you're trying to break in at the pot club.
Mm.
And he already had pot on him. He's got the card, and he had under an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no reason, for, you know what I mean?
Right.
This guy, breaking into the pot club. You know what I mean? It's just find something better to do with your time, you know? And, I mean,
agreed.
It's just, well, the three different, I mean, Launderland is going on here. Three different mortgage brokers got shut down. 300 pounds of coke just went off my street last week.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, get with the program, Santa Cruz. What needs to happen is Bush moved in, this law enforcement sale was here and a lot of other places in the Western United States where they put all the agencies in one office and there's no separation of powers anymore. And when the cops are driving better cars than the freaking doctors, you people had better start asking some questions. And Bush sold it to Santa Cruz saying after the quake, you don't have the money, so we'll do it this way. Well, guess what? We have the money now, and we're tired of it. So why don't you just move your little drug dealing program to another city so they can have the horrid crime we have here now? Because it's only...
I mean, I think that's an important point. I've heard of people, and I've actually... The cases this week have gone to court. Swami is one. You don't know him yourself, Becky, but locals may...
Uh-huh.
He's a sort of a spiritual street guy who helps feed people on Monday nights downtown.
Right.
Musicians have been getting citations for use of marijuana, not even overtly out in public, which you have a right to medicate in public, as I understand.
You
are there
OxyContin anywhere you are, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm talking about with medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that. I mean, there's some state regulation about you have to be a certain distance from a school. I suppose. I think there.
That tends to go city by city. The standard is 1,000 feet from a school. Yeah. Now, what's interesting about that is Berkeley Patients Group opened in I think 99-ish, 2000. And later, a school for the infant deaf opened literally across the street. We can see their building from ours. They are fantastic neighbors. They love us. We love them. We actually donate to their lunch program. The idea that, you know, these places can't exist peaceably in communities and neighborhoods is completely false. I'm wondering, does Santa Cruz have a lowest priority ordinance on the books right now?
It has the lowest priority ordinance on the book. That's being challenged, a part of it, by the city. I actually got the Public Records Act information that's waiting now for me to look over at the city council. The Measure K Commission, as we call it,
mm-hmm.
which is similar to what's happened, I guess, in Hollywood and in Santa Barbara. These are measure, you know, commissions that have been passed with the anticipation that in 2008 on the ballot there may be a statewide tax and regulate.
Yes.
A marijuana thing, which dumps this whole medical marijuana problem,
mm-hmm.
and it just allows people to start dealing with marijuana in a more realistic, and less complicated and repressive
Absolutely.
Manner.
And that ties back to Senator Migdon's SB 529. That would go a long way towards helping, improve the status of things. It would clarify things, you know.
Measure R, according to what I read here, it would also would allow people to cultivate marijuana in their residence on their property. Which apparently is not the case in Berkeley right now, according
to... There are very strict limits. And then also, a patient who is perhaps on Section 8 housing, but simply by having their medicine in their house, let alone cultivating their own medicine, risks losing everything. I mean, you know, it goes back to Mike. Then we become homeless because the city has told me that I can't grow, the state has told me that I can't grow my own medicine. Oh, my goodness.
And we've also found here in Santa Cruz that homeless people are not allowed to have medicine when they go into any of the homeless shelters or programs. In fact, that was the basis for Craig Canada's dismissal of 4 sleeping van tickets because he had no legal place to go. Of course, he didn't have any legal place to go anyway because there's space tonight for 40 people and there are 1,500 to 2,000 of them out there.
Right.
But he had an additional burden because he had medical marijuana. I suggested when I talked to you on Tuesday, right before you went to City Council to the press conference, that you not only, I guess you were considering one aspect of Measure R, but the issue with Measure R is you don't have to wait till 2008 to have an election, even if the judge carries through.
Right.
You can have an election. You can have it. It can be done by 5 members of the 9-member Berkeley City Council. It's a majority vote.
Yes.
Measure R can be voted by a majority. Are you interested in pressing for that? Did you press for it? And are you likely to succeed?
Okay, good questions. Here's the scoop. The rally on Tuesday was actually in direct response to an LAPD-initiated DEA seizure of our assets here in Berkeley.
Okay.
So Measure R definitely plays into this because if it had been in place, we think that this might not have been so likely to happen. But what has been going on down in L.A. sort of, reached a tentacle up into Berkeley and touched a very, very sensitive nerve. They have been raiding, of course, as you've heard, down in L.A. extensively. Last Wednesday was the 5th vote on the Hinchey-Rohrabacher bill, which would basically also decriminalize, it would defund federal prosecution of medical marijuana outlets. So the Hinckley-Rohrabacher bill, and I would recommend that everybody go online if you can and figure out, how your representative voted on this bill. It was defeated for the 5th time. Every year the margin gets slightly narrower, and every year when the vote comes up, there is a wave of DEA action leading up to it. And so on Wednesday, they voted on the bill. Also on Wednesday, there were 10 raids across L.A. of various dispensing collectives. One of those was a sister organization to the Berkeley Patients Group. And on Monday, the Berkeley Patients Group found, as we went to, we checked our bank line and everything, and we found that our assets had been frozen. And apparently that was on order of the LAPD, who then turned it over to the DEA, and on Wednesday our assets were seized by U.S. Marshals. And so we, as soon as we found that out on Monday, of course, we pulled together and began to initiate our response. And part of that response was the rally that I spoke about on Tuesday.
Would Measure R have prevented that from happening?
Wow. Possibly not. Possibly not. But it would have made clearer the city's stance on medical dispensaries. So...
I understand this wasn't really DEA activity, it was LAPD activity initiated. Is that true?
This is why Berkeley, as I said, in 2002 passed unanimously, the city council voted in favor of a resolution preventing the Berkeley police from cooperating in federal investigations. The LAPD have no such, breaks on their cooperation with federal agencies in these investigations, so they actually have a joint force down in L.A., where they work with the DEA. Our understanding is that at least one of their police officers, and probably many more, are actually cross-deputized with the DEA. And so they, hand in glove with the DEA, the LAPD comes in, they provide the perimeter guard, the DEA goes into the clubs, and then, the following Monday, the LAPD, as part of their investigation, freezes the accounts, but they, I guess, I don't know, maybe they can't seize Berkeley assets, but the U.S. Marshal can. And so
we had a similar problem here in 2002 with WAM, Women and Men's Medical Marijuana Collective.
I have to say, I have nothing but respect for Valerie Corral and those folks. They are so brave and just real, you know, role models for everybody.
I have mixed feelings toward Valerie, and I do like what she's done. I've also been critical of the fact that she sat on her hands for 5 years while hers was the only club in the area, and everybody else had to go begging, but she had special access to the city council. But that's another issue. My issue here has the fact that the sheriff's department colluded with the authorities locally, I mean, with the DEA authorities in improperly confiscating Valerie Corral Collective stuff. And,
right.
And we have that same problem here. We also have the problem in courts that the Santa Cruz Police Department can seize your medical marijuana anywhere they want. And even in spite of, in spite of initiatives, because it's a defense in court. You can get you can theoretically get your stuff back, but they can hold it, right, pending a trial. It's an affirmative defense, but there's no prohibition from police seizing medical marijuana even when you show them a card.
No, there is not. In Santa Cruz, there is not.
Is there any in Berkeley? I mean, if a Berkeley police officer seizes marijuana, or if a CHP person seizes marijuana and says, "Tough shit, lady, go to court and get it back."
Americans for Safe Access just won a case last year, or maybe in 2005, against the CHP, where the CHP actually had to change their tactics. They are no longer, if you can provide your medical cannabis recommendation or ID card, they cannot take your medicine. They may be able to take it for a moment, but once they verify that you're an actual patient, the CHP is...
I think I remember that. Are other police agencies following that lead? Obviously,
not
LAPD
yet, there is a whole lot of lobbying work going on around that issue. So, that's definitely one prong of the approach that we need to take here.
We're talking with Becky... Roll your last name by us again, Becky.
Becky DeCoister, community liaison for the Berkeley Patients Group.
And how can people get more information about what's happening in terms of... it sounds like events are moving very swiftly. If they've seized your assets, does this mean people who want medicine up in Berkeley can't get it shortly?
Right now it does not mean that. Right now it means that we are operating under some extremely stringent conditions, but boy, we have been amazed at the outpouring of support from our patient base. The fact that we were able to bring 75 people down to City Hall, you know, with literally less than 4 hours notice, was amazing. The amount of press coverage that we got with that little notice was amazing. And I think Santa Cruz would find the same thing. Your population knows that this is the right thing. They might not be educated about all the ins and outs, but they know that medical cannabis is a good solution, and they know that they should be supporting it. And so, I think that what we need to do is definitely respond. I mean, I think the federal government is assuming that these are soft targets, that patients are too sick or too otherwise occupied to really fight for their rights, and that's what this is about, is our right to our medicine, and we just need to keep that in front of everybody's eyes all the time. So,
Becky, give us a website we can go to get more information, breaking
Absolutely.
News.
Absolutely. I would say Americans for Safe Access runs a very, very important website. It's at www.safeaccessnow.org. Again, that's Safe Access Now, SafeAccessNow.org. And if you hit their website, first of all, they have nationwide news. They also have a Take Action page where you can sign up for email alerts to get literally the latest. When the raids started happening on Wednesday, within 20 minutes, there was a mass email sent out across the state about what was happening in L.A.
What is happening in L.A. now?
Wow. L.A. is very interesting. The city council has come out very strongly in favor of, first of all, DEA, please, leave the city alone. Leave the dispensaries alone. They enacted a moratorium this week, which gives them a year to study how to best regulate these things. There is a way to do this correctly. There's a way to do this that best serves patients, that does not allow for profiteering. And what needs to happen is that LA needs time to study that and figure out how to implement those regulations.
You know, it's kind of a little bizarre to me, and I feel a little wary when I hear you talk about, it seems to me that declaring a moratorium on new clubs plays into the hands of groups like the DEA and prohibitionists who want to restrict this. I mean, you know, people make profit in all kinds of ways.
No, that's very true. But do you want to put the patients front and center, or do you want to put one person front and center?
Are you putting the patients front and center when you enact prohibitionist or restrictionist legislation that limits the clubs in Berkeley, let's say, to three clubs?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that really the best way to serve patients?
The question there is, are those three clubs enough? You know, in combination with the other clubs that are in the area, okay?
And why should one particular... I'm sorry for interrupting you, Becky, but why should one particular item suddenly be restricted? Is marijuana such a toxic item that it needs to be so restricted? I mean, it seems to me that's obviously false, and therefore it adds to the mythology that there has to be some kind of draconian restriction, when in fact... You know, you have alcohol stores all the hell over the place.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and there's some restrictions in alcohol stores, but not three alcohol stores in Berkeley. I mean, come on.
No, you're absolutely right.
So what's this about? I mean, why would you support this?
First of all, alcohol is a federally recognized legal substance. And
so it's all about the federal government, then? It's all about let's restrict everybody's rights so we can please and tease the federal government into leaving us alone? Is that the plan? I mean,
no,
I don't like it if that's what it is.
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying, and I don't like it either. The current, I guess a better parallel or analogy would be to pharmacies or privately owned, you know, drug stores. And in that instance,
a moratorium on drugstores? Who would ever propose such a thing? Come on,
okay,
let's get real here. This is obviously drug war mentality, and if you support it, and it sounds like...
Have you seen Dennis Zine's quotes? He's a council member from L.A. He's an ex. He's 39
years. I'm listening to you talk, Becky. I'm listening to you supporting moratoriums, saying, you know, it's really good because, after all, some people are irresponsible and we have profiteering. You're using the arguments that I hear prohibitionists use, and it's gracious of you to come on the air, and I appreciate a lot of the work you're doing, but I got to disagree with you on some of this.
No, I can respect that, definitely. But I can also, and neither of us is down in L.A. I mean, if we were, you know, I'm
no,
not
but it was done in Oakland. Why did Oakland have to start cutting back clubs? Why did they have to close clubs? You know, I heard there was one club that was even letting people come in and do Amsterdam style marijuana purchases without cards, which I think is just great, a very positive approach to the whole problem.
But that is another step. It's a different, you know. I mean, at that point, you'd need to be talking to some of the other organizations. I mean,
what I'm saying is
we are a medical dispensary, and so. In our estimation,
if other people are engaging in medical malpractice, that's something else. If they're giving out a product that is toxic or polluted or has some kind of paraquat in it. But you're not saying that, right? You're not saying that. None of these dispensaries that are being closed, moratoriums in San Francisco and Oakland, have anything to do with that. This has to do with paranoia about marijuana, doesn't it? So why support it? Why support this kind of paranoia?
I think at this point we need to do what we can with what we have is my take on it. And what we have right now is, you know, a few cities who are brave enough to stand up for patients' rights. And at that point, you know, right now at least that's my focus. That's my fight. So.
It doesn't persuade me, but I mean, I certainly would stand up for patients' rights, and I would appreciate it when cities stand up for patients' rights. But I think unless you speak straight sense to people, you encourage this bizarre reefer madness mentality, which is still and even more than ever running the country. You know, and also provides the model for the war on terrorism and the war on everything else, which is essentially a war on the Constitution and a war on basic rights and a war on common sense.
But at some point, Robert, this is one piece of that larger puzzle. This is one aspect where they are very directly focusing on they're engaging in a war on people who don't have the resources to fight back. And in this case, we need to rally around those folks, and we need to make sure that we do what it takes.
What was the result of your press conference? And what did Berkeley City Council do, if anything?
Oh my gosh! No, we were very, very pleased with the Berkeley City Council.
Before you tell me, however, we have a caller. Let me see if we can put
great.
This caller on the. Although I think the caller is waiting for your answer. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
So at the rally, several people spoke. Chris Hermes from Americans for Safe Access spoke, but most importantly, we had four City Council people come out and speak very, very eloquently and strongly in favor of the rights of medical cannabis patients in Berkeley and across the state. We're asking Berkeley to declare itself a sanctuary for medical cannabis dispensaries. We want the city to take up this fight because, you know, the DEA is sending out, you know, threatening letters to landlords. They're engaging in these smash and grab raids. They're seizing bank accounts of those assets belong to our patients, you know. So what we need is more than one landlord standing up. We need more than one dispensary standing up. We need more than just medical cannabis patients standing up. We need the city, we need everybody united to say, please, back off. You know, you do not have business here. You are violating our rights. So it's, for me, it's not just a medical cannabis issue. This is a huge human rights issue. It's a constitutional issue. It's much bigger than that. And so the city council, to get back to your original question, four of the city council members spoke very strongly in favor of our movement of protecting patients' rights. They actually, even though it was a special session of the council and they did not need to give us public comment time, they did allow us public comment time at the beginning of the meeting. We entered into the record two statements about, you know, what was happening. And also Senator Carol Migden, did send a statement of support where she urged the city of Berkeley to declare itself a sanctuary and to really take a more active effort in protecting the rights of these medical patients who are really, really threatened right now.
We should also talk about what the Berkeley City Council didn't do, which is they could have passed an emergency law specifically authorizing Measure R and declaring Berkeley a sanctuary city. That isn't provided for by Measure R, is it, or is it?
No, it is not. It is not.
But it could have been done by I think they can do it with a special vote.
They can do
vote.
It with five of nine with a special vote, and they did say that they will be convening a special session. They are open to that fact. So.
They're open to that, but they didn't want to do it on last Tuesday.
Well, and this all did, again, we sent out our information. We didn't have all of the information. We didn't know exactly what was happening until Tuesday at 3:00 in the afternoon. So the fact that four of
right, but it's not rocket science to declare Berkeley a sanctuary city. You don't need, it doesn't require elaborate legal analysis to do that, does it?
No, and anyone who is interested in helping us persuade them to do that, I welcome your calls, your letters, your, you know.
Nor is it rocket science to say we are, you know, we're passing Measure R pending an election in 2008 because it looks like, you know, people have been denied the protection of Measure R for the last 2.5 years. They didn't do that either, and I would be very surprised if they do that, although I'd love to see it happen. And
I'm with you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it sounds like the Measure R folks are not entirely satisfied with three clubs. They want to have other clubs having the right to open up, and they may disagree with you on your belief that somehow there should be a restriction on the number of marijuana clubs.
You know, they absolutely may. I was right. I was not as active in the scene in 2004 when that measure initially started as I am now. So.
Well, I'm glad you're active enough to call. And here's a quick question. Maybe we could, because I know we've had you on for a while, but let's see if we got a question from a listener. Can you listen to that?
Sure, absolutely.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Becky and Robert.
It's Madison again.
Madison, hello.
Madison. Got to remember that Enron was the biggest funder of Bush's campaign, and Enron's gone now. So who's the next big funder of the Bush campaign, or the West, you know, the whatever wing they are, the right wingers there? And maybe they need to grovel on all the little pot growers around so they can black market their campaign.
It sounds right. A little incoherent to me, Madison, but...
No way, Robert. I mean, where are they going to get the money that they didn't get from Enron?
Where's who going to get what money?
Well, Bush is... Okay, Enron was the one that financed...
We're talking about DEA raids on clubs in Los Angeles and on the seizure of the Berkeley Club's resources and also of local governments responding to this.
All over. It's like, why are you bothering the pot when there's methamphetamine and heroin?
I know you're upset about methamphetamine and heroin. I'm talking about marijuana. That's what I'm talking about.
Because it's an easy target and it's a lot of money quick. And it's an election year.
Oh, it's not.
Where are the Republicans going to get their money to run their
Madison,
big campaign?
It's not,
if Enron's not out there. Google?
Madison, it's not an election year, but thank you for calling in.
Well, you know, I think I see where Madison might have been going with that.
Go ahead.
These are marijuana dispensaries are easy targets, and it goes back to what I said. Patients,
that's true.
They don't have the resources to fight back. They don't have, you know, the ability to say, hey, no, you're stepping on my rights as a human being. And so I think I understand where she's coming from there, actually.
Okay.
So.
Well, I appreciate your having taken the time to call in and talk with us for an hour. Anything,
Robert,
you want?
I want to thank you for giving me the forum to do so, and I know that we don't agree on everything, but I think we need to all remember that we are all in this fight together.
Oh,
and
yeah.
This fight, and they brought the fight to Northern California today, this week, and I would urge all of your listeners to please go to safeaccessnow.org. Please hit the Take Action page and sign up for that listserv if you have the ability to do so, and if not, keep listening to media like this, because this is where the real story comes out. So.
One last question for you,
sure.
Becky.
Mm-hmm.
People who are, generally fighting for a tax and regulate marijuana, or are fighting for a broader policy of sanity, mm-hmm. regarding the drug war,
mm-hmm.
Dennis Peronish types folks.
Sure.
How are they responding to this situation? Is there much coalition between the Jack Herrar kind of faction, the Emperor Wears No Clothes author,
right.
and those who are, very limited and strictly concerned with medical marijuana?
I think when it comes down to something as stark as what's happening right now in California, there is that connection, and it's only going to get stronger. I think the more people see medical patients under attack, no matter what their stance is on the overall legality of the substance, I think everybody can agree that it's the wrong thing to do.
Is that a hopeful comment, or have you actually had other organizations calling in to be supportive?
We have a broad network of support, actually, and I could list, off the top of my head, several websites for folks to go to. If you're interested in more general marijuana-related policy issues, the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org, the Drug Policy Alliance, DPA.org, there are all, and CalNormal, CANORML.org. These are all fantastic organizations, and they're all working to protect all of our rights and to look out for these abuses and to speak up when they happen. I think that's a very important part, too, and that's something that I really appreciate about your radio station, is that when things like this go down, the mainstream media will present it in their own particular way, but the real story comes out from the real people, and that's what we're all about. We're all in it together. So,
well, I'm real thankful you called in, and let's do it again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Robert, and we'll all stay strong together, okay?
Sounds good to me.
All righty. Have a good night.
Thanks, Becky.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Becky D. from Berkeley, and the actual name here is DeCoister, I guess it is. She's a community liaison for the Berkeley Community Patients Group, which I probably have bungled a little bit, but that's the deal. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Stay tuned. Light up your flame.
And welcome to Battle of Spares Broadsides yet again. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Tomorrow, August 3rd at 8 p.m. at Pacific Avenue and Cooper Street, downtown, in front of the Cinema 9, or the Evil Plex 9, as some call it, there's going to be another edition of the Santa Cruz Guerrilla Drive-In. I'm quoting from indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, a program of rollicking and poignant Guerrilla Drive-In subversive shorts. As you know, for years we've shown shorts before our feature film. By popular demand, an entire program of subversive shorts. And it's not going to be out at the railroad tracks, but you have to bring an FM radio. That's going to be 8 o'clock tomorrow night. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, it's Madison.
Madison.
This is my last call.
So, say again?
But this is my last call, I think, unless you get into something cool. But my friend, Lynn Mosier, called, and her dad is the guy, if everyone remembers the Watergate Commission.
The Watergate Commission?
Yeah, that took down Nixon when the senators were doing the interviews.
You mean the House Judiciary Committee? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of a little kid, but we listened to all that because of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first senators after Pete McCloskey, who my dad got in. McCloskey's the first person to call.
Yeah, McCloskey wasn't a senator, he was a representative, but I got your point. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was a senator, I believe, in Alaska.
Senator Gravel, you mean?
Or yeah, Gravel. G-R-A-V-E-L, spelled by Gravel.
Yeah, he's said some good stuff about Iraq.
He is so fed up, he didn't necessarily want the presidency, but he's running, he's the farthest left Democratic thing, and he stood up to enter the presidency race because he's fed up with Bush and he's fed up with everyone who's not listening, and he was the one who asked all the questions during the Watergate trial and interviewed Nixon and the whole bit. Gravel, G-R-A-V-E-L.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Gravel, and I'm also familiar with that he and...
But the kids aren't, Robert.
Well,
not
hang on.
About our world.
Right, no, I know, but actually...
They don't even know anything about Watergate.
Hang on, Madison. In fact, Gravel is on the, is on the iPod debates along with Kucinich. He's the one who makes the intelligent statements about getting the fuck out of Iraq. So anybody who watches those debates can know that. But you're right,
He's going to be in The Nation magazine, which is another good one to read.
Yeah.
And he's coming out with a book.
Right.
Well, I mean, have to catch up more on his platform.
Right. Well, I'm not, I don't want to turn this into a love Gravel fest.
He said he would
frankly.
Let you speak to him. So at some point, maybe we can arrange that.
Well, if he wants to talk on the air, be happy to talk to him. I mean, frankly, anybody who's connected with the Democratic Party generally, as far as I'm concerned, kind of up shit creek, because no matter how good a position you have, if you're relying on the Democratic Party, you're not going to get very far. That's my feeling. But
well, anybody who wants to get a hold of Lynn, it's L-Y-N-E at Mosier, M-O-S-I-E-R dot name, N-A-M-E. That's L-Y-N-E at M-O-S-I-E-R dot name. To hear what they have to say, to give her some money, or whatever you want to do.
I'm sorry, who is she and what is the point of this?
She's the daughter of Mr. Gravel from Alaska who's running for presidency of the United States of America, and he's the one who took down or helped take down Richard Nixon.
Yeah, well, that was a long time ago. John Conyers also helped take down Nixon. Now he's helping to support, he's blocking impeachment resolutions against Cheney and Bush. So it's a little different.
But he's probably in the last 40 years gotten invested like Feinstein.
Could be. Probably
right,
true.
So get somebody new. Okay, thanks.
I agree with you, Madison. Thanks. And, not necessarily a bad idea, in principle. But hooking yourself to anybody else, to any of these Democratic Party candidates, to me, it's like backing Howard Dean or backing John Kerry or even backing Dennis Kucinich, I mean, you should back the positions these folks take. I back the positions when they're right, and I thank them for saying what they said. But to suggest that if they get into power, which they never will, of course, but if they did get into power, that they wouldn't significantly have to retrench their positions, I think if you don't think that, you're really not looking realistically at the issues. Power generally does that to people unless they're part of a mass movement. Then things can be different. Then you have other people you're responsible to other than the staff members on the city council, if you're running for city council, who essentially poison the scene for you because you have to rely on them for information and
for assistance, as the current city council did and the past city councils have. And you're rotating in. You're trying to get enough money to get reelected, particularly if you're running for a federal office. Anyway, but it's certainly worth looking at the positions of Gravel and Kucinich and staying, I think it's more important to look at what the positions of people who are fighting in Iraq to get rid of the people who are oppressing and occupying a foreign country. That's probably even more important than looking at Kucinich and Gravel. And that's something we know even less about. I've talked about the 7 Sunni insurgent groups that have made up a group of... they tried to establish an office in Syria. They're concerned with establishing a clear set of conditions in which they want all the occupiers and all the collaborators out, and they want to turn the country over to native Iraqis, not the people who are looting the country and who've invaded it to establish democracy and better profits for the oil companies. Well, let's leave international politics for a moment, and let's talk about, or let's listen to, some voices from the street. And this is the kind of stuff you're going to be hearing if you come down to the Bookshop Santa Cruz on Sunday, which is where we're going to be continuing our, going to have an informational picket, I believe, is the latest plan, where we're going to be picketing the bookstore and encouraging customers to either not shop in the bookshop, or if you do, to ask Ryan Coonerty, one of the chief workers there, and Neil Coonerty, the owner of the bookshop, why they favor the anti-homeless laws, and not just as private citizens. These are people who had an instrumental position in maintaining these laws, particularly Coonerty, who's likely to be mayor in November, because the vice mayor usually rotates into the position of mayor. There's no election for mayor in Santa Cruz. It's done by the city council. It's an internal process. Citizenry has nothing to do with it. So why is Coonerty supporting laws that criminalize the homeless people that have been thrown out in Los Angeles, San Diego, and Richmond? You know, why is Santa Cruz, progressive Santa Cruz, continuing to be a human rights violator? I mean, that's the issue. And it's a pretty simple one, and you can say, please call me back, Ryan Coonerty, and tell me what your answer is. Because I want to be able to patronize Bookshop Santa Cruz. You know, they do some good stuff. They're a local store. They have bathrooms that are generally open to the public if you're not banned from the bookstore, like I am. But, I think that's a real resource for the community, and I've said that often. They don't have a personal policy of hostility toward homeless people, although Ryan Coonerty did help push through the law that makes it illegal for a homeless person to walk into a parking garage seeking shelter from the rain, as has been his or her right for the last 3 or 4 decades, no longer, thanks to Ryan Coonerty's 15-minute trespass law, as he calls it. It's 15 minutes if you have a bike or a car there. It's 0 minutes if you don't. You're not even allowed to walk in there. And these are anti-homeless laws. They are specific and they are particular. They don't use the word homeless, but that's who they're directed at. And they masquerade as being public safety laws. And we don't need that kind of, frankly, fascist mentality, where merchants in collusion with police agencies run the situation. It's not a good idea, and is, a form of corporate fascism locally, where the merchants can, use the police as private security forces. And the laws are tailored to police discretion and selective enforcement. That's wrong. Now, let's not kid ourselves. It's true in many different cities, but Santa Cruz kind of takes the lead in this. I think there may be one other city in California that has such a parking garage paranoia law. There's no other city in California, particularly with the federal court ruling it's cruel and unusual punishment, that has a sleeping ban after 11 o'clock at night and on all public property and much private property as Santa Cruz does. And Mike Rotkin would tell you, well, that's because in Carmel they just beat them up and run them out of town, but our police are more humane. We do it legally. If you want to buy that, I have a bridge, way up in Minnesota that you might be interested in checking out. It's fast, false rhetoric. You see it, for example, in the San Francisco Chronicle, and I've been seeing it for the last week, where hypodermic needles is a big picture in today's Chronicle of a huge number of hypodermic needles, and then talks about hypodermic needles in Golden Gate Park. What they don't tell you until you read the small print is that this is a box of hypodermic needles that have been turned in to a needle exchange, not the hypodermic needles that were found in Golden Gate Park. In fact, nowhere do you find really the figures for how many needles supposedly are creating the big threat in Golden Gate Park. And then you have the real story, which is eliminating homeless encampments and attacking needle exchange up in San Francisco. And instead of real, honest assessments of, you know, real problems that might arise and will arise, you know, once the sleeping ban is lifted by the federal courts after our lawsuit succeeds, assuming that, you know, we get the same kind of decision Los Angeles gets, you know, after the city spends tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of your dollars because they don't want to discuss it openly. Well, then we'll have to really talk about safe and legal places to sleep, finally, for the first time. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Well, Robert, the needles.
Madison, you called again.
I know. We have two experiences in my family with the needles.
Yeah.
One is my aunt was hit by a drunk teen and a vegetable for a while, and the needles that were dirty gave her AIDS, and she actually died of AIDS. But had they written AIDS on the dirt birth certificate, the death certificate, we would have never, the family would have never got funded, so the doctor did a, you know, wrote in whatever else went along with AIDS, so that it would be paid for. And
you,
then kids,
you know, you're kind of, Madison,
another nurse we know was pricked by a hep needle, just
right.
One tiny prick, man, and she's dying.
I got you. What relevance, Madison, does that have
to
anything I'm talking about?
Needle users have a poor self-image, and they're in there groveling, and your kid is out there in a playground. Come on.
What is this about, Madison?
One needle can really fuck up somebody's entire family.
That's true. And one police beating can do the same thing. And a raft of evenings where you can't sleep legally can do it to you, too.
You're throwing it into a sandpit for.
I'm sorry?
You know, where it can hurt a little kid. Well, you're the violator.
What does that have to do with the sleeping ban, Madison?
Well, you were talking about the needle exchange and the picture.
I was talking about the fact that, well, I'm talking about needle exchange.
Yes, you were, Robert.
No, I'm talking about the fact that the San Francisco Chronicle has a story where there's a picture of a whole bunch of needles juxtaposed.
Yeah, but
to
it was generated.
Wait a minute. Juxtaposed to what they're also talking about, which is homeless encampments. Now, you have to run homeless people out. But there's no evidence that homeless people are any bigger users of needles than people in their homes. So it's complete bullshit.
That's true, but the people in their home, they're using, you know, maybe, you know, the kids aren't digging in the sand pit at home finding the needles. It's a social space that everyone should use.
So we've heard your needle stories, but I don't think they're...
It's a park. Everyone should treat it like a frickin' museum. Okay?
Thanks,
have a great day.
Thank you, Madison. You know, I'm afraid that I don't find that quite on target, but hey, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, right? Right, 427-3772. So call in and do your worst. I'm available. We have about 35 minutes left in the show. Let's let some of the folks on the street talk for themselves. I talked a little about the fact that we'll be going into, I guess it's round 5 or round 6 at the Coonerty Land, trying to make this guy responsive to public discussion. Of course, the city council's gone on vacation for August, so can't expect too much. Unless there's lots of people, and maybe on August 12th we will have lots of people sleeping out at City Hall and reminding the community that, well, not just the community, that there are a lot of people who have no legal place to sleep, one, and two, that other cities that are many times our size have established legal areas and suspended enforcement of sleeping bans at night because there is no other humane alternative that has yet been created. And until it's created, you don't criminalize people for sleeping. And you don't put big pictures of needles next to homeless encampments and say, gosh, that's why we should get rid of homeless encampments and run the homeless people out of Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. Similar kinds of crap are used by Ranger John Wallace to terrorize the community around the Poganip, dirty campsites, some of which are dirty because, well, if you try to clean up campsites and haul your trash out, you're making yourself a police target. For one, and for another, the police take some delight in despoiling campsites themselves. I've heard reports. I've never actually seen police despoiling a campsite. I'm not usually there. In fact, I got a report of police going after campers along the old Camp Paradise area, or along the riverbank area, while we were having our Huff meeting yesterday at the county building. Come to our Huff meetings at 9:30 to 11:30 in the mornings. Please, we'd love to have you do that. That's right at the coffee cart outside the metal detector in the county building area there. But We can't go in and watch them because the police, thanks to Danette Shoemaker, have declared the entire area along the river. I shouldn't say the police. Parks and Rec have declared that entire area a forbidden zone. You know, you can't go in there. What they really mean is we're going to clean out homeless people and homeless encampments from that area, but we're not going to provide any additional services. We're just going to say, get the fuck out of here, which is sort of what you heard Mike, who called in earlier, say that he was told by Officer Hernandez. This is by his account. I wasn't there. He might not be telling us the truth. He might be exaggerating. He might have done some horrible things. But I've heard this kind of story relatively frequently. That is to say, of this kind of routine harassment of people for simply being in a public space and not looking the way a policeman thinks someone in a public space should look, even though that's really none of their business at all. Anyway, here's some conversation, interviews, and chit-chat from the last demonstration we had. Actually, I think it's a couple of demonstrations ago. By demonstration, it's more of a tabling event. There's some musicians. We give out lemonade. I'm doing a little hawking and denouncing the bookshop and urging Coonerty to come out and so forth. And as I said, on Sunday in 4 days, we're going to have people with picket signs. We invite you to be part of that picket line saying, you know, Ryan Coonerty, come clean. We have a man who's with a family group signing a petition. Your name, sir?
Matthew.
And Matthew, you say you heard about this on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah, on Pirate Radio. I heard it this morning about the sleeping ban about the bathrooms in downtown.
And what did you think when you heard that?
I wasn't aware that the bathrooms, there was a law that you're supposed to let people use the bathroom.
Actually, I wish there were a law. If there is, I'd like to see it. But there certainly should be a law. But the problem is people don't have a bathroom to go to, particularly if they come here around town at night, unless they're going to a bar. Well, but you're signing a petition about the sleeping ban. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm an artist living in my old 1970 VW van. I've been
criminal artist, eh? Sleeping at night without a permit. We may have to turn you in.
Yeah. I travel in my old VW bus with a lot of integrity and trying to follow all the rules, and I do it because I like living in an intense experience. It's more intense living. I feel like I'm getting the most out of my life. You know, being in my old VW bus and traveling, I see the world more intensely. I don't live a boring, mundane life behind walls.
How long have you been here in Santa Cruz?
Off and on for 4 years.
And so how have they treated you? Because you live in your vehicle, presumably you may have been ticketed.
I've been woken up and early in the morning and harassed a little bit, and and the cops are really condescending, and they make you feel really small.
When was the last time this happened to you?
About a year ago.
Would you like to join the lawsuit against the sleeping ban?
No, I think the issue will resolve itself.
Okay. Again, we've been talking with
Matthew.
Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah.
So we just got a signature from Rick. And Rick, what do you make of all this?
Well, it's kind of hard to say at this point because I moved here 7 months ago, so I've been kind of, you know, trying to get into the group.
Acclimate yourself?
Acclimate myself to the area. My daughter's been in the area for 8 years and, you know, had to help her out in different ways in terms of dealing with the county and the authorities and, you know, that type of thing. And I don't want to go into detail, but
some problems there. So yeah. You probably have some sympathies for people who are sleeping outside.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm getting more I guess I'm seeing both sides of the coin more clearly now versus when I was in Connecticut. I didn't see things the way I do now.
How has your view changed?
My view has changed that everybody's got a right to exist. Everybody's got a right to live.
No human being is illegal?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, but I'm sure.
Ningún humano es ilegal, as they say in Spanish, or at least something like that.
That could be it, but. I like what you said. Can I comment about something you said? I like what you said this morning July 22nd, 2007, on your radio show that, you know, situations like this are probably going to get to a point where just talking about it and making phone calls and writing letters is not going to do it. There's going to have to be some kind of radical thing happen.
Mass action of some kind.
Yeah, and whether that's physical violence, I don't know, which I'm totally against. I personally feel very threatened by it, but, you know, I've never been in a position where I've had to protect my daughter, life or death, so maybe who knows what I would do, but, you know, in terms of the war, in terms of just society in general, I think there's going to be some radical stuff going down. So, thank you.
We've been talking with
Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
Miley Rapp.
Talking with?
Yeah.
What's your name? Amy?
Amy, yep.
Who is this man to your right?
This is David.
Now, you've just signed a petition. Why so?
Because I don't think it's right that just because of your given circumstances that you don't have a place and that, you know, like you were saying, you know, everyone deserves not only a, you know, support of their community, but also, you know, it's a focus on the bigger problem there. It's like if you're not going to help people who are in that situation, then you shouldn't be making it more difficult than it already is. So.
Have you been homeless yourself?
I haven't, no, luckily. Been in some, you know, pretty like couch surfing dire circumstances, so I guess that's close, but never, you know, to the point where I didn't have a place to stay.
Are you local?
From Boston, actually, originally.
Well, that
but
explains it.
Now.
Questionable liberal people
yeah,
from
yeah,
Boston.
Yeah, I know.
You'll soon learn that being a liberal in Santa Cruz doesn't require you to support local civil rights. Just just wave at the national issues.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Talking with
Charlie Phillips.
Yeah, from the hours of 7 p.m. to 9 a.m. I, state your name, did sleep.
Well, state your name. What? Why did you? How could you possibly do this in a city like Santa Cruz, which has welcomed you with open arms, and here you are flouting its ordinance?
Well, nature took its course. I was watching a TV show, and it just came upon me.
You mean you were indoors sleeping? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah.
So you didn't flout the law. You actually had a house around you.
Oh, yeah. There was a house.
That's a little better. All right. Now, at least we're, you know, getting somewhere. I thought you were a bum or something. We're talking with that, should we call him Irresistible Al, Inexhaustible Al? We'll think of something. It's Al anyway. Hi, Al.
Yes, Al McDaniel. Approximately 10:45, 11 o'clock a.m. this morning, Sunday morning, a man takes a trash out of a trash can. He takes a cup. Police is trying to give him a ticket for scavenging. He declined to sign the ticket, so they bring five officers out. Arrest him, and right now it's around 3 o'clock, so since late morning until now, he's been put in the jailhouse. They did let him out because he said it was too cold in there, and he went ahead and signed the ticket. But this is the way Santa Cruz is treating people. Over a cup, they lock you up.
You need a paper cup.
Yeah, a paper cup that he dug out.
The man, obviously, they were trying to protect him from should we say, staph infections that might have been around the paper cup. So in a way, it was for his own good.
Yeah, I agree. But to arrest or give him a ticket as opposed to a verbal warning?
Stern measures are sometimes necessary to deal with intractable homeless people who have an aversion to authority and a tendency to rebel.
Yes, I do understand that.
Not enough of a tendency to rebel, unfortunately, but something of a tendency to rebel.
This gentleman may be coming down this way momentarily, so if so, I think I can lure him over so we can get his own personal view of this.
All right, what's his name? Who knows, eh? Now, you just had a chat with this guy, huh?
Pardon?
You just had a chat with him?
Yes, I was coming up on the river walk there, just came over the bridge, and he was within a half a block from the jailhouse, returning back here to Pacific Avenue.
So, fair enough. Thank you, Al. How's the photographing going?
Going good. My camera, like, there's one time I didn't have it. It's something at the camp. So I wish I'd had it. Five police officers, one man with a cup.
Now, you're also part of this Homies for the Homeless.
Yes, I am.
And maybe you'd like a few flyers to take with you.
Yes,
oh, yes.
We're covering up.
What's your name?
Sarah Belden.
And Sarah, why are you signing this?
Because I work in the social services field, and I see what a struggle it is for homeless people to access services here in town. And while there are some good services, there's not enough, and they're difficult to access.
What kind of social service work do you do?
I work for the Health Services Agency.
And do you access a lot of homeless people?
I don't currently, but in the past I've worked in HIV prevention and testing, and I've worked at the drop-in center where I see a lot of the homeless
people. What kind of familiar there? How long ago were you working there?
A couple of years ago.
And we have an event coming up called Homies for the Homeless on August 12th. There's going to be a sleep out, teach out, snooze out, who knows what else out, at the City Hall. Is that something you might bring your expertise to, perhaps, Sunday evening, 2 weeks from tonight?
I won't be in town.
How convenient. Break your plans and return to town. We're talking with...
Brian Backer.
And Brian, you have a critique of the city's laws.
Well, there's some things that are a little ludicrous. Yeah.
Such as?
No dog walking down this street here.
No dog walking for the poor.
Well, for anybody, as far as I know.
Well, that's what the law says, but we try to give the tourists a little leeway.
Oh, they give tourists leeway?
Well, we try to.
How do they distinguish between the two?
Well, you know, you want to encourage the better sort of person.
The better sort of person?
Yeah.
Being somebody who's going to put money into the city?
Now we're talking. Here's a man who knows up from down.
Right, right. Well, I guess I just have a little bit of logic and reasoning. Yeah, I understand that, you know, the city's got some people in the office that really don't listen to the general, well, you know. As far as I've only been living here about 6 months, and I don't know,
any problems with the police you've noticed, or?
I haven't really had any problems with the police, just these regulations.
What kind of regulations have you find yourself running afoul of?
Afoul?
So to speak.
Beaches. Again, dogs. Hours being there partying.
We have to regulate our town. What do you want this to be? A mecca for every Tom, Dick, and Jerry?
Well, it shouldn't be, but it should also be
free.
You
can buy your own beach. Have you considered purchasing a beach?
It should be the same.
Set your own hours.
Same as any other place in this whole state. You know, it's California. It's not Nevada. You know. Like, we got to loosen up a little bit, right?
Well, Carmel has a beautiful model for all of us, see?
Right.
A little quaint shop for everyone.
They're trying to up all the values, all the property values around here, right? And they can't have that with a bunch of bums laying around.
Exactly. Now you're catching on. You, sir, what's your name?
Zach.
What do you think, Zach? Any comments? You just signed this petition.
Yeah, I did. Comments about what?
Oh, the sleeping ban, the laws, the police. What do the people need to do to restore justice? The war in Iraq, you name it.
Anything.
Honestly, we have all the right to exist on this planet. And if they're being jailed and warehoused and treated unfairly, harshly, discriminated against because of their dress, because of their mannerisms, because of the way they look, because of the way they hold themselves, their affect, their mood, are slightly askew to what mass communications and broadband.
A sensible majority.
Broadband and internet and media in general tells us, then we gotta, well, make petitions, right?
Thank you very much, Zach.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Joe Ritchie.
And Joe, you have a sign here, disabled, houseless, hungry, God bless our troops, or in this case, Bush's troops. That's my view, USA. And we have, it's about 20 to 9, we're on Pacific Avenue on Sunday evening, the 22nd of July. You're doing some spare changing, and it's not looking too wealthy.
Yeah, that's right. People are being real tight these days. I can understand that. But when you need food and you can't get it through the welfare or whatever, they give you the runaround over there. So, you know, you have no choice. You got to eat.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
I've been here for a year, but I've been around the corner here in Monterey, Big Sur, and Carmel for five.
So I noticed these tickets. You showed me five tickets here. At least two of them are for sleeping or camping, and they're all pretty much in the last month, the last 3 weeks in July. And you also, so you've been getting tickets. These tickets are for, a little hard to read some of these offenses. One is that being in an enclosed area, the area along the river that they've shut off to people, and you were caught sleeping there?
Yeah, actually, the day before that, I talked to an officer who gave me a ticket for sleeping behind a building. He said, he told me if I want to drink beer and I want to camp out, to go on the other side of the levee and relax over there, and I won't get bothered. But, you know, that wasn't the case.
When you did that, you got another citation?
Yeah, I got another sleeping ticket and an open container ticket.
So what else we got here in terms of tickets? It's getting a little twilighty for me to read them.
Well, I basically got two of each, two sleeping tickets. No, one open container, one being on private property or whatever, it's county property, which the cops told me to go to.
A closed off area.
Yeah, closed off area.
Along the river.
Yep, and the last ticket is for another panhandling, sitting on a bench, which, you know, I'm not pleading not guilty because I wasn't really even panhandling at the time, just being harassed.
Okay, now, is there a particular police officer or officers who are paying particular attention to you, or is it a number of police officers who are doing this?
Well, it's a number of police officers, but I keep on bumping into Officer Zig quite a bit. He's got me down for a couple tickets.
What's his name?
Zig. Officer Zig, I believe.
I'm not sure what that would be, but...
But I don't know his first name, but...
What's his badge number?
Badge number 445. And this guy's just wherever I go, he'll sneak up on you like I was cleaning my bags out, and he snuck up behind me. He's watching me clean my bags out for 20, 30 minutes. Watch, just right behind my back.
I think he has a thing for you.
Yeah, I think he has a thing for us. Definitely.
No, perhaps just for homeless people generally. Now, you have a companion here. Your name, sir?
John.
And, John, you two are sitting within 3 feet of each other and with a cup out. And of course, it's after dark, so you're under arrest for violating the after dark. No First Amendment after dark rule in Santa Cruz. But you actually, you have some special permission because you have a disability that requires you to have a person near you? What's the specific
thing? Yeah, I applied for a program called Access Paratransit, which is a federal program to help disabled people get rides, you know, wherever they need, kind of like a taxi shuttle service. And I have the right to have my personal care assistance with me under that program. I have a card, and it says personal care assistant, yes, which means yes, I can. And I was talking to a hospitality man today. I forget his name, but he said that we still have to split apart like 15 feet. And I told him that I have blackouts and stuff, and that I need my buddy there for me. But he said it don't matter.
Actually, 15 feet?
Yeah.
Actually, that is not accurate. You have to be at least, I think it's 3 feet away. I actually may have a copy of the requisite ordinance myself with me now. I don't have it. And another pair of pants. It's not 15 feet. That sounds like something they made up at the spur of the moment. It's 15 feet. It's 14 feet from a building. You have to be 14 feet from a building. If you're either sitting or panhandling, not if you're performing. You can perform anywhere you want, but if you have a cat out for performing, you have to be at least 10 feet from a building. That's very complicated, but it's all for your own good.
Right,
see?
Right.
Yeah. Make sure you work on these memorization exercises. And,
yeah.
You
get the sheriff's department actually gave my identity away to a convicted bank robber.
Tell me about that.
And it was about 7 years ago. He went in, and my name is really common, John Miller, and he said, my name is John Miller. And they said, oh, yeah, we know who you are. Never even fingerprinted him or did anything, and all of a sudden we became one person with the same set of prints and everything. I lost my wife and my house over it, lost my income for about 6 months. And every time I get run for warrants, now when I get a ticket, his name pops back up, and they threaten to haul me off to Montana for manslaughter or some charge like that. And I don't know how to make this whole thing go away.
This is the
Sheriff Robbins, Sheriff Department, I guess previously Sheriff Tracy's. Sheriff.
Right, right. I had another thing to say. I had a ticket down in San Luis Obispo. There's a homeless problem with the police down there. Also, me and my friend were hanging out. My friend was drinking a beer, and basically a cop gave us an open container ticket, and he put my last name on my friend's ticket, and on my friend's ticket, they put on his last name on mine. And it turned into a warrant, and I ended up in jail twice in Santa Cruz over an officer's mistake. I think that's very unfair.
You also said that when you were in San Luis Obispo, the police adopted a tactic of intentionally putting the wrong name on a ticket so as to create a warrant because the person wouldn't then get noticed that it was the ticket. You would go to court on the date you thought it was. You had to appear. When you got there, you wouldn't find your name. You'd find some because he'd written somebody else's name on the citation.
Right. I went to the clerk's office. The date and time promised to appear, and there was no record of me. And they wouldn't give me a letter or anything. I just knew the girl's name was Lisa, so I wrote that down. But San Luis Obispo's got the worst problem in Santa Cruz in my eyes as far as panhandling. You're not allowed to sit on a bench for more than a half hour, you know, and I think that's unfair to disabled people.
So, I mean, even if you're not panhandling, you're just sitting on a bench?
Yes, you can't sit on a bench.
Well, no, benches are valuable commodities. You don't want them taken up with riffraff.
That's right.
Now, actually, it seems back to this case in San Luis Obispo, if they wrote you a ticket under a certain name, you had a copy of the ticket, so you knew what name it was under, right? So when you went to court, it must have been under that name because that was the name which the court put it under. So I'm not quite sure how the police could screw with that.
No, actually, I didn't really see the ticket. I totally forgot, and I just went in there and told them, you know, I'm here for my court, and there was no record of me. Mm-hmm. And later on, I found a ticket, and that's when I figured that...
It wasn't under your name.
Yeah,
then.
That's right.
But of course, he may have done that because he simply was incompetent.
Yeah, they are incompetent. A lot of them are.
Or made a mistake, if you will, if you want to be generous. So, you're here on the street. You sleep out every night. You've told me that... I guess perhaps you too, John, that you might be interested in joining the lawsuit against the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban?
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to join the lawsuit.
What about you, John?
Absolutely.
So what we want to do, for those of you who are listening who want to join the lawsuit, you can, if you have a contact phone, I don't know how many people have contact phones around the street, you can call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and leave your name and phone number and say, I want to join the lawsuit. Call me back. If you don't have a contact phone, you can do one of the following things. You can come to an event that happens Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night in front of New Leaf Market in the evening about 7 to 8 or 9 o'clock. And there will be someone there. There are musicians there, and sometimes there are members of Huff there who could fill out for you. You got to fill out a questionnaire, you know, how old are you, you know, are you aware of shelter in town, will you refuse shelter, are you going to be here for the, you know, any foreseeable future, what's a contact point,
right.
A friend's contact number. It doesn't have to be in this city, it can be somewhere else in the country, but somewhere we can get in touch with you, because we may need to have you come into court or be at least contactable,
right.
By the court.
Right.
So, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, about 6, 7 to 10,
right.
There's this group playing and feeding in front of New Leaf Market. You know where New Leaf is. And then on Wednesday morning, as you may find in that little card I gave you, there's a meeting of Huff, Homeless United for Folly and Foolishness, or Friendship and Freedom, depending how you want to look at it. And that's in the county building right across the river on the ground floor right when you go into court. Right before you go into the court, there's a coffee cart. And you'll see us sitting around between 9:30 to 11:30 chattering away.
What day was that?
Wednesday, 3 days down the road.
Gotcha.
Another prospect, if you want to come and talk about these issues, is come to city council meeting on Tuesday nights. It's actually the second and fourth Tuesdays, and the only problem right now is there's one more meeting, and it's in 2 days at 7 o'clock at night. And after that, they're all going to go into recess for 6 weeks because they need their recess.
Yeah.
Those council members, you know, they work very hard. So, now, it's John.
Yes.
John, you say you were here 20 years ago, and you recognize my aging face from those days.
Yes, from a long, long time ago.
What do you remember of me from those days?
Well, I know that you've always been active in the community. I'm
better active than radioactive.
Yeah, that's right. And
hey,
I know that, I'm sure that you know a lot of the same people that I do. And you really don't look that much different.
Oh, there you are. Age cannot wither him. Anyway, so I wish you luck. You say you've been harassed today. You told us to stand apart 15 feet.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That was a hospitality man. After me, I showed him my card, my federal card for having a personal care assistant because of my medical problems. He said separate. In that 1 second, I could lose my life that extra 15 feet.
Actually, it's very peculiar that they say 15 feet because there's no such law. Unfortunately, I don't have the municipal code with me. He obviously doesn't know or doesn't care about the municipal code, or maybe he's misinformed about it. But come to the Huff meeting to join the lawsuit, and also if you want to do some work on, we might set you up with a camera to take some pictures of the police. You said you originally were doing some video work yourselves?
Yeah, I was actually doing some work with a Terry Lee Martin show here in Santa Cruz. He's on Saturdays, I believe about 5, 6 o'clock on cable access, Terry Lee Martin. We did a show on homelessness and panhandling, and we were setting up, and police hospitality people walked by and bitched at us, and we said we're working. And then 5 minutes later, two black uniform cops pulled up and broke up their ticket books, and we're going to get ready to write a ticket. And I told the police that these are just props. We're actors. We're filming live. Mm-hmm. And my friend John here told the cops to turn around, and when they seen the camera, they jumped back, and they walked down the street flying. And then the next day, we were watching the screening in the parking lot, or that evening, and when I woke up, I had a beer, because I had, not in the morning, but in the afternoon, I had a beer, because we had permission to be on the property, and as soon as they cracked it, the cop pulled up and gave me a ticket on private property.
And the officer said that it was semi-private property, and that it was more public than private property, and that's why he gave us the ticket. Now, I don't see how that's possible.
And also the officer said, he said, do you have permission to drink?
Well, you are, after all, under 65, therefore you aren't really gotten to the age of true maturity, right?
That's right.
There you are. We've been talking with
Joe Ritchie
and
John Miller.
Gentlemen, I really encourage you to join the lawsuit because it sounds like you've got some bad experiences and you're likely to have some more, and you also are articulate enough to be able to put the story out to the court. And it doesn't really involve showing up. You have to fill out a deposition and join essentially 27 other people, although we may be cutting down the list of people down to 5 because we want to kind of, you know, it costs money to file these fucking things and we don't have the money to do it. But appreciate the accounts. And if you got any new stuff that comes up and you want to waste some of your money on calling the radio station, you'll find my show times are on that card. Also, again, the Huff line, 423-HUFF. And this is for anybody listening. If you see police misconduct and you want to report it to the Huff line. I'll replay it on the air. You can record a message about a minute and a half length on the Huff line. Any last words?
No, I just hope this town is more lenient. I think it's not a crime to sleep. I think it's not a crime to smoke marijuana for your medicine, which they cops still, some of them don't agree with that, which I've heard of them stealing medicine from people. But I hope we can do something about this problem as soon as possible.
Thank you. Any comments?
Yeah, I'm just hoping that pretty soon it's not illegal to breathe in Santa Cruz.
Well, if they could find a way to bottle the air, don't hold your breath. Or perhaps you'll have to hold your breath.
And we're reaching the end of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. A quick flash for those of you who follow the Terry Lee Martin Show, which is a cable show. I think it's on 25, 26, or 27, one of the three Santa Cruz cable channels, on Saturday evening at 6:30. I am going to be on that show, a live show, in 2 days, actually, day after tomorrow. Terry Lee Martin was one of the people, I believe, who signed our petition demanding that the city council behave and stop and direct its police to follow the federal law like Los Angeles, San Diego, and Richmond are doing. I should say the Constitution. Our law, our basic bedrock law. And he invited me to come on the show, and I'll be on the show 6:30 on Saturday. So you can actually see me babbling away on the air live on that day. Also, a final word. I never did much of a conclusion to the E3 issue. E3, of course, was the Playhouse That was on Cathcart between Front and Pacific Avenue, closed down by the city council for violating its permit by selling alcohol after, I guess, 10:30 and allowing dancing. And there's been some articles on it in the Good Times and the Metro. I may comment on it further on Sunday when I come back to you at 9:30 in the morning or earlier if Thomas and I get together and want to do some flashback show stuff. I have a long show on Sunday morning from 9:30 to 1, and Thomas Levitt does the thing called the wake-up call, assuming his health is okay. I think he's improving. So hopefully he will be doing a show on Sunday for those of you who are fans of the wake-up call, which is 7:30 to 9:30. I'm going to be talking about the E3 playoffs probably then, but it's really kind of a dead issue now because the citizenry has let it go. I guess Wes Anthony, the owner of the E3 playoffs, is suing the city. But the sad thing is to look at the way the media has treated it, not just the Urinal or the Sentinel, as they call themselves, Santa Cruz Sentinel, or the Scotts Valley Santa Cruz Sentinel, whatever, since they're moving to Scotts Valley, but also the Good Times and the Metro Santa Cruz. They kind of give you the official line of, here's a guy who violated all these permit requirements and he shot himself in the foot, and why didn't he follow the rules? If only he followed the rules, it would have been okay. But there was no investigation about whether the original rules were reasonable and whether the council wasn't destroying a valuable community resource by not modifying those rules, and whether the complaints that came in against him were significant complaints, or rather crank complaints from essentially two people, which the police department was able to leverage into a massive anti-E3 Playhouse campaign. You know, I don't know if all the answers are in on those questions, but what is significant to me is that the issues were never discussed. Those questions never came up, either at the City Council, the Good Times, the Metro, or at the Sentinel. We have a caller. Hi there, caller.
Well, Robert, it's amazing.
Madison, call number five.
Two of the catalysts of the four owners that have been thrown out of five cities, okay? The catalyst new owners have been thrown out of five cities.
Uh-huh.
Two of them got popped for methamphetamine, and that place is still open. And one of them's kind of pedophile-esque and doesn't like older people. That's why the open mic is gone and the older people dancing is gone at night, because he's got a creepy sense of little girls, is from what I can observe.
Okay.
So all the seniors had to move to E3. So what I see is good little Wes puts his $300,000 to fix that building and get something going in there. So they go, nah, 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 nah. So then they put their Launderland buddies that are from the Planning Commission on there and took, you know what I mean, took over the nice space that Wes Reed did.
Thanks, Madison.
I
got a roll.
I think they should all be canned.
Thank you. No, I mean, there's something to be said. I mean, every speaker at City Council, with I think maybe one exception, not even that, supported the E3 playoffs, and the City Council spat in their face by refusing to allow a continuation of it. And their only argument was, it sets a bad precedent. You know, we can't allow one person to do this, which is to say, deal with rules, you know, deal with the situation where admit that the Planning Commission may have had some bad rules, because they never justified why they felt this particular club was the straw that broke the camel's back, particularly given its good record generally in terms of all the community service it provided. I'm going to be talking more about that when I come back. Coming up next, it's Uncle Dennis from the Cream of the Dregs. Here's a little transition music.
I hear you, Dennis.
Oh, goodness.
Who's this?
I think we should sleep on the man's lawn. Thank you.
time. Unless you're going to go out and join the Teamsters, we got to get this train loaded up and out of here by 8:45 tonight, or it's about to have my ass.
There's a hobo getting on the chain down there.
Are you shitting me? There's a hobo in my yard.